One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for all of you. Hallie, how you doing?
Well, I have two concerns. One, two things that weigh heavy on my soul.
Sure.
I was working from home on Monday, and suddenly I hear the sound of water splatter against tile, which you hate to hear it.
Oh, no.
But as someone who lived in New York for a long time, you hear it, you're like, well, my day's ruined.
Yep.
And I go into the bathroom, and there is brackish, like dark, like impenetrably dark water coming out of the bathtub and the toilet, and I am panicking. And luckily, because let me say, if you have ADHD, or really just anybody, but if you're somebody who has anything going on with you, might I suggest my three bucket system? I have three buckets. One of them is for plants, and I wrote plants on it so I don't forget. The other two are just miscellaneous. Do I need a bucket?
If you need a bucket, there's a bucket here.
And one of them I used to clean, so that's a cleaning bucket. But the other one's miscellaneous. And then, luckily, they moved. I'm like, thank God I have three buckets to bail out. What I'm thinking is shit-filled water. Luckily, it didn't smell like that. It smelled like dirt, right? Which is still disgusting.
So it's just like
I'll take
water.
It. Exactly. Yeah. And so I panic. I'm, like, texting my neighbors. Like, anyways, they send the plumber, and he thinks a root got into one of the pipes. And we've had so much rain. And also, like, we're a city and there's trees everywhere. Like, even more so than New York. So I'm sure that that happens constantly. But, and my friend, Jess, friend of the pod, came over and helped me. And it was truly just the moment of seeing the water. It's like, well.
That's a tough day.
Because it's like, well, that can't do anything else. That's my whole day right there.
No, that's it.
But luckily it all got resolved. And the other thing that is unresolved is, of course, the state of the election.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Literally, I can't even go on Twitter right now because it's just, and I want to say, if we're pivoting to Kamala, we're pivoting to Kamala. Whatever we got to do, we got to do.
I don't care who it is.
No one does.
It can't be Joe.
If it is him, well, I guess that's okay because it's going to be Kamala in the next 6 months anyways.
In the next, six months. Yeah.
If you want to roll the dice. It just like, and it's not even the debate. It's not even him refusing to like step down. This is his, and I work for Crooked Media. They've talked about it, like right for Love It or Leave It. He's talked about it. Like, it's like, if things are okay, he could at any point in time go on CNN, talk to anybody, hey, clear things up. But it's not all right, obviously.
Yes.
So he can't do that. And that's not even to say like he's cognitively not well all the time. However, it does mean that we have passed the point where a president could come and just say, hey, everybody, bad night, whatever. He's having too many
bad nights for it to be a thing anymore, for him to be legitimate option.
And then now they're trying to like push back and be like, oh, you know, you've been hearing a lot of scuttlebutt from different places, but just so you know, everything's fine.
I watched 90 minutes of it.
The scuttlebutt is, we watched 90 minutes of you, dude. I don't like it either. You don't have to like it, but I also think we have an opportunity in August.
Yes.
So I would say take the next week.
Broker the fuck out of this convention and find someone else. I don't care who. Anyone.
And I would say at this point, as someone who, I've talked about voting blue no matter who, I understand people who don't do that. I get it. I personally am so afraid of Donald Trump at this point and what conservatives want to do in this country, which they already are, because that's the other thing, is the Supreme Court overturning weighing in on his immunity case.
It's like, I'm afraid of him, but I'm also like afraid of just like the unchecked power that he will give like the right as like a movement. Like, because it's he'll be like, do whatever the fuck you want. And I'll do a bunch of crazy shit too.
And he is like the ultimate American president because he's completely hollowed out. It's only business. Yeah. There is no morality. There's no ethics. There's no concept of himself as like someone in history. And that he's the perfect person for a bunch of religious zealots yes. to use Weirdly. To gain power and then implement, which they already are. You know what I mean? Once we lost Roe, and I feel like the only benefit of it is I'm glad we could all be talking about this openly.
Yes.
Because I have no investment in not talking about, like, for example, the Martha Ann Alito flying that one fly a shame yeah. flag about queer people. That's insane. Yeah. And I think specifically we need to talk more about like the corrosive detrimental effect of religion on America yes.
Christian
and around the world.
Is like terrible. Look at France. France is doing their own thing right now.
And I think that a lot of people have lived under this cover of like, oh, we're Christian, whatever. It's like, I hope if you're Christian, you're going to talk to your church about this. I hope you're going in and saying to everybody, hey, so just so I'm clear, are we going to be a part of this white Christian nationalism? Right. Because if so, I will leave or I will go. Yes. Like, because I want to, like, people are not being realistic about, like, if you are religious, this is on you yes. to stop.
Yes.
Like, we're going to do what we can, obviously, but like, you are the ones giving the money to these entities and then going to church. Sorry, I don't like it any more than
right.
you do, but
that's where we
that's
are.
My feeling about it. Yeah, like, sorry. We wish you guys weren't doing this either, but yet you are. So, yeah, I mean, again, like, as a queer person, as women, there's really no... It's nice to be honest with one another. After all this time, we don't have to fucking... Oh, two sides to every story. Not anymore, baby. Yeah. It's one side where we want to maintain rights, another side where they want no-fault divorce. Yeah. They want women to be able... Right. Like they want abuse. They want yes. the patriarchy in the most severe, racist, like, religious indoctrination way. Yes. That's just is what it yeah. is, you know? So I don't know. Maybe that's like the... Again, not the silver lining, because, again, I'm not Susan Sarandon over here. I don't think there's a silver lining to Trump being elected the first time, nor the second... Yep. But in terms of, like, American culture, it is nice that we don't have to be... I don't feel like we have to, like, tiptoe around this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, pretend, like, oh, well, I don't want to offend a Republican.
I don't give a shit.
People are awful. You guys are... You were deplorable. You were deplorable to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you feel about Hillary Clinton, she was never going to win. They better not put her up again.
My God.
Please.
That can't...
It can't happen. We'll obviously take Kamala a million times over before her. But it's like, let's all live in our truth. And the truth is that many people would love to see, they just want power over other people and that's it. And they will give up their own humanity for it. And that's nice to be in that part of history. We don't have to pretend with one another. We don't have to do this dance. Allison, how are you doing?
I mean, all that stuff aside, which I'm also obviously keeps me up at night, I guess. I think I have plantar fasciitis.
Oh yeah, well you gotta. Wait, so what does that look like?
It's like I always assumed it was a topical thing, and plantar fasciitis is like a tendon. It's like I wake up in the morning and my feet feel like they were hit with a hammer.
I guess I thought it was a skin thing,
yeah, no,
too, like a callus
or something.
No,
I think I just have to, like, you have to, like, stretch your calves and kind of, like, deal
I'm
with your
sorry.
Feet. But it's like when your calf tendon is too tight, it, like, pulls on, or calf muscles are too tight and it pulls on the tendon. So it's like the bottoms of my feet hurt, like they're sore.
I am so sorry.
And it's like worse in the morning because, like, that's like you haven't been stressed. Like, when you're walking around, you're kind of like working that
right.
stuff out. But when
if
you're like,
you were sleepwalking,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I guess I could take up that.
When
you wake up in the morning and you're like, ow, 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 like the first like 20 steps of my day are like excruciating. And I'm like, is there anything to do for this? And it's like, no.
Yeah, I think that is turning 40, where it's like,
yes.
Well, I just hope whatever the next thing is something I can manage.
Yes.
And it's not like, well, yeah, the rest of your life, your feet are going to hurt every time you walk. And that's just it, baby. But I'm sorry. That's hard.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. But other than that, I'm, you know, existing in the fall of American democracy and just trying to kind of get through the day.
Yeah, well, what's that Kamala Harris quote that people keep posting where it's like, you exist in the context?
Yeah, did you just fall out of a coconut tree?
What is that from?
I have no idea what she was saying.
Yeah, I mean, part of me, it is a vibe, I guess, if they wanted to ride with this.
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with you young people. Oh, she says her mother said to her,
oh.
I don't know what's wrong with you young people. You think you just fell out of a coconut tree. You exist in the context of all which you live and what came before you. when you read it all together, I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, yeah. It's not also, so like, unusual.
Feels unfair to attribute it to her in all of these contexts where, like, it is something her mother said to her, at least in terms of her story. So,
right. I think it was perhaps more of the delivery.
The delivery was pretty kooky.
Classic Kamala. And, well, again, if she's going to be president, we're all going to
fine.
We're all going to sign up for that. I think it's like Republicans want to take rights that we don't even know that we have. Does that make sense? Like,
Yes.
With the overturn of the Chevron doctrine.
I didn't think divorce, like no fault divorce, was ever going to be on the table. Something that like we should be worried about.
Well, I didn't think that child labor would be back on the table. I didn't understand that like they'd have 15-year-olds working overnight shifts in slaughterhouses.
Yeah.
And again, we speak from a place of privilege, but unfortunately, we all lack the privilege of having control over our country.
Yes. Hey guys, it's Allison, you know, from the podcast, but I'm just popping in to remind you and alert you that, of course, a July show is coming, and it's going to be our live show for July will be July 28th at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, as usual. And we will be ruining A Quiet Place Day 1 on July 28th at 7 p.m. And you can get those tickets at moment.co/ruined. Again, that is moment.co/ruined. And if you are a top-tier Patreon member, you know they're going to be in your inbox. You know you're going to join us, and it's going to be the most fun. So get those tickets, moment.co/ruined for July 28th. And we're going to be ruining A Quiet Place Day 1. Okay, see you there. Bye.
Well, with that being said, let's ruin a horror movie and hopefully give you a little break, a little a breath of fresh in the midst of the ongoing descent into hell.
Yes, and this is a departure from our theme because we did need to tackle it for our live show so that we're caught up.
Yes, and that is we are doing A Quiet Place Part 2. In order that we might do A Quiet Place Day 1.
Yes.
It's because we realized, we chose that, but we have not done the second movie.
Yes, so.
There's water in this, but it's not a bog. It's very clearly the ocean.
Yes.
And what is the ocean if not a bog? It's not.
It's not.
But this
actually
again,
not.
This is written and directed by John Krasinski. It is a direct sequel. It basically starts, it jumps around in time, actually, but pretty much starts the second the first one ended, which I really like in a sequel.
I will need a refresher of what that was.
Oh, sure. Okay. I'll just...
Who was left?
So left, we have Evelyn, the mom, played by Emily Blunt.
Yes.
And we have her two older children. So Reagan, the daughter who is deaf and uses hearing aids. And via the hearing aid feedback, they realize they can make the aliens vulnerable so that Emily Blunt can shoot them.
Okay.
And they also have a son named, oh my God, what is the son's name? Sorry, Marcus.
Okay.
And then, of course, their younger son, Bo, died tragically at the opening of the first movie, eaten by aliens. Yes. And then during the film, Quiet Place, they give birth to a baby.
Yes.
That, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't have a name. They don't know. They only talk about the baby. They don't refer to the baby as anything with a name.
Okay.
But at the end of it, they have successfully
killed. Is John Krasinski dead?
John Krasinski has died. He died in the first Quiet Place film. And in case this is all news to you, too, please go listen to our Quiet Place episode.
Yes, we did that movie, so go listen.
Or also, if you don't care, that is pretty much what happened. Family goes up against aliens that I would argue, in fact, can really only hear as like a normal human would. It just they have to kind of be in the area.
Okay.
And they kill one. I believe the implication is they kill three, all the aliens in their area. But then, we'll get into it. Unfortunately, they have to move to a new location, which is the events of Quiet Place Part 2. And we always like to have Allison watch the trailer. So, Allison, what did you think of the Quiet Place Part 2 trailer?
Well, I think it included, like, a couple of beats from the first movie because, like, John Krasinski's in the trailer.
So there is a flashback day one. And it's actually called Day One, which I presume is how they got the idea for the third one. It's like, oh, yes, we could be part of the franchise, could be seeing other people and following their stories on that first day, which I think is a very fun way to do a third movie.
I agree.
So he appears in flashbacks in the film.
All of it in the first trailer, I don't remember getting eyes on the alien, but you do in the second trailer, and I knew it was spidery, and I didn't like seeing it. That's for sure.
Yeah, they really take a bat and they strip it of everything cute, right? Yes. Like actual bats are adorable.
Yes.
You know, they're kind of, they're like little puppies, and it takes the mammal out of it. So it's just a spider-like bat design, which I thought was like a very, I think that's smart. I think that's interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
And then of course they have sort of their heads open and reveal these sort of swirling ear-like organs that give them this, their hearing ability. Luckily they seem to have very little senses and also kind of are dumb, like in a dog-like way. That I think is good. Like, thank God they're not also intelligent.
Right.
Allison, how scary, we always take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of being alone after the alien apocalypse, taking care of two kids and a baby?
No. Just having three children and everything being like regular.
Yeah.
Absolute no, a non-starter. Being alone in the post-alien apocalypse, also terrible. Combining those things, pretty much the worst thing I can imagine.
Like, I love kids. I'm sure I'd be happy to have people around in this event. But knowing that I am the adult, which makes me in charge, and that if something goes wrong, I am responsible for these children being eaten by aliens. Well, it just isn't for me. I just don't choose that life. And if other people do, I totally support it. But yes, it is a scary idea for me. We're like, oh my God, I have to take care of a baby on top of everything else.
No, that's also like at some point I would be like, I just want to talk to another adult.
Absolutely. And luckily she does have that opportunity. But what that other adult has to say, Allison.
Oh boy.
Now they might not be on the same page. And with that in mind, would you like to guess the gist in A Quiet Place Part 2?
Guess the twist.
I'm going to guess, like, my guess is that they're, like, trying to leave where they are and go to where other people are. Like, that it's like a journey movie.
Yes. Absolutely.
And I'm going to guess, I don't know what a person could, like, I would imagine everybody wants to help each other out, but that's probably not what's happening when they find other people. I'm going to guess that the other people try and, like, sacrifice them to the aliens so that they can survive.
Perfect.
But hopefully Emily Blunt survives because I like her.
She's the best. She's great in this movie. I do think it's funny. I think she must have in her rider that she can't look bad because you see some people later in the movie where it's like, yeah, that's what you would look like. You look like hell.
In this environment, absolutely. And she's just like, she could like
highlights
be on a cover of Vogue.
Right. She just had like a leave-in conditioner with her.
Yes.
All right. Let us begin ruining A Quiet Place. Ahem. We see a truck park in small town America, and from it steps John Krasinski, or rather his character from the original Quiet Place movie. We are flashing back to the first day, the day the aliens arrived on planet Earth, or day one, if you will, of the alien invasion. And it says on text on screen, day one. We hear, sort of as he's getting out of the truck, he's sort of not paying attention, but we are starting to hear things as he walks through this very adorable main street. We hear an anchor saying it happened just moments ago. He walks into the general store. We realize that he's walking into the store that we open on in the first film.
Yes. Yes.
So when they were going there to get pharmaceutical, you know, supplies, that's where we're at. We're at the general store. So they've got groceries, they've got toys, they've got everything you possibly want.
The spaceship toy.
We see the shopkeeper, Roger. He's behind the counter, but he's watching the TV. And there's another woman there sort of slowly putting her items to buy on the counter. And they're both looking. We see him buy a big sack of oranges and a big thing of water. So I correctly clocked. He is going to a children's sporting event. He had to bring the oranges.
Yes.
Did you have that as a kid?
That is soccer.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It was like orange slices and then also like a treat, like a Capri Sun and a Rice Krispie treat. Or there's some treat.
A Rice Krispie treat. A Rice Krispie treat.
Heaven.
Gatorade or Hi-C and oranges.
Like, or gummy bears or like gummies or something.
Yeah.
So obviously he was in charge of oranges and we see him walk down the aisle and we actually see the spaceship that killed his son, Bo, from the original movie. So we see that little spaceship that Bo inadvertently set off, thus drawing the alien to him and with the alien killed him in the first film. He goes up and he says, Roger, what's going on? What are you guys watching? And Roger's like, I think it was a bomb that went off. Like they don't even have the beginning of like what they're even talking about. And the woman says, oh, that's so sad. And we see her like slowly putting her groceries. And Lee says, I'm in a rush, so I'll come back and pay. And it's such a beautiful small town that Roger lets
that you
leave.
Can just kind of have a tab at the store.
Yeah, come on back. You're good for it.
Yeah.
We, of course, because we know what's happening, because we know that this is a horror movie, we hear what the anchor says, it sounded like a missile, not an airplane. We see Lee then walking across the street, and he's eating an apple, and I'm like, I didn't see him pick up an apple, but it is funny to be like, I'm going to buy oranges, and now I'm eating an apple. Like, it was just a weird choice.
A lot of fruit. Yeah.
Everyone in this small town is going to the same place, Allison, the baseball diamond, for the big Little League game where their son Marcus is playing. Wife Evelyn is there, as well as Reagan, who sort of chides Lee. Because Lee comes and he puts the oranges on, like, the wood of the bleachers where everyone's sitting. And he starts to cut it up with a knife with his hand. And she's like, and she signs to him. And she signs the entire movie. And then people are either translating out loud for her or she's able to read lips. And at some point, people could read her lips. So in case it's like, she says, she's signing it the whole time because she continues to be deaf in this film. And she signs to him,
that's how it works.
Your hands are filthy. And I was like, yeah, what are you doing?
Yes. And also, like, so is this wood. Like, this isn't a cutting board.
Yeah.
Like, it's an outdoor bench.
We see Bo run over, because again, in this movie, he is alive, at least for a little bit. And he gives Marcus a piece of gum. And we see Marcus put the gum in and look at his mom. And Evelyn signs, just breathe, you're going to be great. Because he is up next to bat. We see Lee chatting with another dad whose kid is playing, who also has a little boy, played by Cillian Murphy?
Yes.
Cillian Murphy, who's also sitting in the bleachers. And they're just shooting the shit. One of the kids slides into home, and Emmett asks...
How do you say dive?
And Reagan shows him it's diving. Like, you put your hands together, and then you dive into the water.
Yes.
And everything's really great, Allison. And it just
looks like a lovely
beautiful
life.
Beautiful day. Everyone's kids are happy, healthy, and not being eaten by aliens. I have some bad news. Emmett has a little radio that he has tuned to the, like, whatever MLB team they care about in this region. He has that game on as well. The radio goes to static. Marcus steps up to plate. Strike one, strike two, and he stops dead and looks at the sky. And everyone falls silent as they see a gigantic fireball fall through the clouds to the earth.
Nope.
And I think if we were to see it, it looks like, oh no, there was some sort of Challenger explosion. Like it's obviously... Yeah.
Right.
This is not...
A satellite is crashing to earth. There was a spaceship that is going down. Something.
Boeing is at it again. Something huge is falling to earth. So everyone sort of falls silent and then isn't sure what to do. They do something that I don't think would be my instinct, which is everyone grabs their kids and ends the game and immediately starts to drive home. I feel like my instinct would be, let's all go to the general store. Let's all stay here. Or, like, let's find a place to be together. Because if it is a Challenger explosion or it is something like that, what would go? I don't know. Like, it just, like, well, then how would we know that if we're all in disparate places? But I understand everyone's panicking. So Lee and Reagan go to his truck. Evelyn puts Marcus and Bo into their car and they say, we'll meet back at home. Lee and Reagan pass Emmett putting his kids in the car. And Lee says, did your brother at the base say anything? Presumably whatever military base nearby.
Some military
base. And Emmett says no, but he just called me. I'll call him back. We see Lee throw Reagan in the truck as a cop car pulls up, sirens blaring. And we see Officer Ronnie get out because of a small town. Obviously, Lee knows him. It says, do you know what's going on? The cops don't know yet either. It's just happened. So now there are dozens of people. So I guess this is why it's good that people were trying to head home. Dozens of people are on the sidewalk, like trying to like look because the actual fireball has descended, but there's like a huge plume of smoke from its path. So everyone's kind of standing around being like, what the fuck could that possibly be? Allison, a gigantic alien smashes through the front of the shop window and all hell breaks loose. The aliens.
So they're already.
The aliens are here and they are attacking people immediately. And this is a great sequence. It's in one of the trailers you watch. If you want, you watch that whole sequence of the alien attack because it's a lot of. We're moving between our two groups. So we're moving between Evelyn and the boys and Lee and Reagan. And so we're sort of moving, I think very deftly. I thought this was well directed by John Krasinski. And we get this great moment that is the trailer where Evelyn's peeling away. No one has any idea what's going on. Peeling away and then looks and sees what looks like a tour bus or like a bus if you were in New York, you're going to DC. That's like what kind of bus in my mind. Hurtling towards her, the windshield is shattered, and there's an alien looming out of the bus, and she has to throw her car in reverse and then floor it. So she is roaring in reverse on this small street where there are people running across. They're trying to get their cars. They're running into each other as multiple aliens arrive and start attacking people.
No.
The only thing problem I have with this film is that the aliens are just kind of kicking people's asses. Because presumably they don't want an R rating. But.
Oh, so it's not like gruesome.
Yes. But then it's also like, okay, so do you have a little bit of time? What are the aliens think is going on? Are they attacking you because they're afraid? They're aggressive? Like, is it just dominance?
Because it's not like they're just eating them,
right? Like, it's one thing if it's like grabbing people and eating
them. If they were just eating people,
there'd be a clarity, but I also understand that might be harder to get the under an R for that kind of thing.
Yes.
So we get this great sequence. Reagan sees all this and runs out of the truck, and her dad chases her into traffic. We see the traffic lights smash to the ground, and the aliens are just like running roughshod over this little town. We see Lee and Reagan are set upon by aliens, so they duck into the drop-in where the local bar where a bunch of people are already hiding, and they shut the door, and they're all hiding silent. We see like again the silhouette of the alien and its face sort of unfurling.
I don't like their heads.
And they at least established that everyone should be quiet. And then because Lee and his family can sign, they already are at an advantage, right? Because other people struggle to communicate that. And even if they could, it doesn't matter. Somebody's cell phone rings, Allison. Oh, God. And the alien explodes through the front window. Again, at this point, it's just kind of throwing people around, which I get.
Yeah, sure.
Lee and Reagan are able to escape out the back door, chased by an alien, and they are able to get to an overturned cop car where Evelyn and the boys are actually now hiding behind the cop car, having had to abandon the car. And unfortunately, the alien is barreling down on them, and Officer Ronnie intervenes, and as the alien runs towards them, shoots at the alien. Cut to the end of the first movie. So that was our intro. It happened that quickly. The family was saved because they knew sign language, which we all should know. Anyways, I think.
At least like baseline.
Yeah, it just seems
like some important, like just like survival type communication signs.
Now we are with Marcus hiding with the newborn baby while Evelyn and Reagan shoot the alien at the end of the first Quiet Place. And Evelyn goes to them and says, come on, let's go. Title card, Quiet Place Part 2, day 474. Ooh. So it is the day of the event, like where the last movie ended, right? So we see Evelyn and her kids emerge from the basement. And unfortunately, they were in the basement of the house, which is where Lee had his science lab, essentially, where that classic whiteboard where it says, like, what is their weakness? They are now headed back to their living quarters, which is the barn, and they lived in the basement. And the basement, if you recall, is flooded with water because the pipes were broken.
Yes.
And that has led to a catastrophic fire. So everything they have is being destroyed. And Evelyn has to go into the burning building, into the flooded basement to try to get like their baby box, like their soundproof baby box they made, and the oxygen tank. Because it's still the baby's going to cry. So they have a little oxygen tank with a little baby oxygen mask that they sourced.
Oh, so little.
I know. And so like she's able to get everything. Meanwhile, Reagan goes back into the basement of the house. She usually builds a little amplification kit. So if you recall, she uses the feedback from a hearing aid into a microphone to create a large amount of feedback to sort of blow out or stun the alien so they could be killed. So now she has a little portable amp it's kind of a little suitcase, a microphone, and the hearing aids. Of course, I'm like, how long do those hearing aids batteries work?
Right. They've got it. Yeah, right. And it doesn't seem like there's a charging station.
Yeah, you can't charge that mic, or maybe you can if you had a generator. Do they have a generator? Like, I of course have all these logistical questions.
I know.
But they keep it moving in a way that doesn't get bogged down. I feel like we've done movies where you're like, all right, well, that wouldn't happen. This, they do a good job. Right. Like, hey, I believe you. I trust you. we see Reagan find her dad's map of the local residents. So in the first movie, we saw faraway fires. Yes. So that we know there other people are alive. And we see there's six circles and three of them been crossed out. So presumably her dad was tracking the fires. Three either left or died, were eaten by aliens. So there's three people or groups of people nearby, close enough that you could see the fire. But it is miles and miles, like, because they live in the middle of, I presume, upstate New York. So you are high
That's
up.
What it seems like.
And to take a baby and two kids and a bunch of stuff, it is a huge hassle. But
huge.
And we don't see Evelyn make this decision, but I think it makes sense. She's like, I can't do this alone. I can't be here alone. We need some kind of other families or people around. And so they're going to leave the next day. And at nightfall, Reagan climbs up to the top of the grain silo and lights their fire and looks at the map and they try to figure out, like, sort of which one to walk to. So they're going to walk to essentially the closest fire. And she finds her dad's watch up there. And she looks at it and I'm like, time to go? Like, I you know.
Yeah, sure.
But she takes it with her. And the family walks away from the farm as the fire continues to consume it. And they walk barefoot back through town. If you recall, they make that sand path. Everyone has filthy, bare-ass fucking feet.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, they pass.
I don't know how my plantar fasciitis would handle.
You would hate this. Oh. My sciatica would be acting up. Your plantar fasciitis would be acting up. We'd be a mess.
We'd be a mess. I'd be complaining the whole time.
I'd be in the belly of an alien. They pass the memorial where they had made for Bo, which is like little photos of him and a little cross in the place that he died. And they end up walking to the nearest fire. And there's even smoke during the day, so they're able to see it. It is an abandoned factory. Wikipedia calls it a foundry, and I think that makes sense. Like, there's a lot of, like, gigantic iron equipment.
Yes.
And, like, vault-style doors and hatches. I'm like, sure. That's why not? They slide in through a gap in the chain link fence. It's also super overgrown. So this has obviously been abandoned even before the alien attack, if you ask me. Like, it looks like it's been abandoned for years.
Yeah, for
overgrown,
years.
Overgrown, very beautiful, like, sort of flowers growing all over this, like, the crumbling building. Unfortunately, Evelyn gets through the chain link fence, and then Reagan comes through, and she trips on a wire. So there's a wire set. It is an alarm or a trap.
Intentionally. Yeah.
And when she does, a rope covered in tin cans and bottles drops. So it makes an extremely loud sound.
Oh, my God. Why?
Evelyn says, of course, run. Because as soon as they hear it, they all know that's going to attract an alien if there's one in the area.
Yes.
So they haul ass through the interior of the factory grounds. Again, gorgeous. I'm loving it.
Beautiful.
Marcus brings up the rear. Marcus steps in a bear trap. So not only do we have the trip wire.
Where would you even get that?
I don't know. And that I don't know. I guess he just had one.
Yeah.
He screams, of course, because you can't help yourself. One of the aliens arrives. And Reagan,
of course,
sort of like, at least we see the test. She turns on her kit. We see her get her hearing aid and a portable amp to blast the alien with her feedback. Meanwhile, we now cut to a shot of this scene through a sight, like a scope on a rifle.
Oh,
somebody
okay.
is at the top of the building watching them, deciding, should I pick them off? Because they brought this alien here.
Yeah.
However, this person waits and then sees the feedback, disarm the alien. We see Evelyn cock the shotgun and blow its head off, killing the alien.
Yeah, great.
So at least this person who was potentially going to shoot them out of convenience sees they figured out what to do. Like, that's a great plan.
Yes.
But, of course, now there's a shotgun, all this noise. Other aliens are going to be there, so they got to get Marcus out of the bear trap and run into the factory, which they did. So at least in the factory, you could maybe hide or, like, find some sort of area. And they run inside, and Evelyn is grabbed by a man. His face is covered with a handkerchief. Or bandana, rather, like his lower half, and he shushes them.
Yeah.
And it turns out there's an alien inside the factory that's practically on top of them, on the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And this man leads them down into his living quarters, which is also in the basement, while the alien sort of runs amok, knocking over giant coils. And
a question.
Yes, please.
Do the aliens make any sounds?
You know, not really. I mean, occasionally they do, but they're not. They're kind of like the raptory chittery noises.
Oh, yeah. They're like...
Yeah, it would be nice if they had more of a signature sound.
Like a screech or a...
But no, you're right. It's
or the... like a guttural something. It's just something. I just feel like they should make a sound.
No, you're right.
That's my two cents, John Krasinski.
Well, we'll see what they do in day one. And they're definitely smashing around a lot. So I guess I associate the noise with them with the busting windows and running around. I mean, do they scream? Now I feel like it didn't stand out to me if they did. They were very typical monster type of like animal chittering noises.
Yeah.
The guy starts to take them down this hatch into his living quarters. Reagan gets separated, but then falls through a hole in the floor. But luckily the man knows about the hole because he lives there. So he's created sort of a bed of like different bags and sacks. So when she falls, she's...
Love to sleep on a bed of sacks.
It honestly looked much more comfortable. I was like, there's no way it's comfortable like it looks. I mean, I would try, but fortunately everyone gets down safely into the basement and then he takes them, puts them into this large vault style door and he shows them that it can seal, but if you close it completely, it will seal you in and it is airtight. So you have to put something in the door or somebody has to be on the other side. Like, at one point we see someone put a towel in the door and I was like, that is insane. But also I'm sure I would do that. It's like, that is the flimsiest thing to keep you from being sealed in an airtight tomb of your own making.
Yes.
But what are you going to do? You have to hide from the aliens. So he throws all of them in there. And shuts the door, but with the towel, so he's able to, you know, open it again. And he says to them, and he's sort of like keeping his head down, his hat over his face, he says, you can't stay here. I know you traveled up. I know you traveled a long way, so you could stay here, but then tomorrow you have to leave. There isn't enough here. There isn't enough water. There isn't enough food. And Evelyn goes, Emmett? It's Emmett, their friend from town, right? From the baseball
Killian game. Murphy.
And Emmett looks up, and he has at least the decency to look ashamed. And then she lifts the box, the baby box, and Emmett gasps. He's like, oh, my God, you have an infant? Were you fucking insane?
Yeah, I...
But Evelyn says, please. And we see a watch timer go off. And when the watch timer goes off, that means he has to open the door because to get oxygen. So at least we know there is a way to set a timer to open it.
Okay.
And when they do, the alien has left, and Emmett has supplies, so he goes and he gets alcohol to dump on Marcus's bear trap wound, because now he has an open wound from a filthy, filthy, rusty
like
bear
an
trap.
Iron.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ugh. So now you've also put a time, like a clock on, is this wound going to get infected? Are they going to have to get medical supplies? What's going to happen
Seems
with the
like
wound?
Yes.
Yes. Sort of in his quarters, we see Reagan finds Emmett has drawn his sons over and over again. So he's like drawing them. So I thought that was sad and very sweet. They put Marcus to...
So it's just him.
It's just him. They put Marcus to bed. He's not doing great, but Reagan has a little radio. And so she puts on his headphones so he can listen to static. So it's like the white noise of the radio because nothing's coming through. But it's kind of soothing in some sense, and he passes out. And we see Emmett and Evelyn sitting in silence. And he asks, so, like, about the feedback, when you do the alien, I saw you do that. How does it weaken them? And she goes, bitch, I don't know. I'm not a scientist. Right. Like, she says, it just works. I don't know. Like,
we figured this out by accident, and, like, we're running with it.
Yeah, but it's like, I'm sure it's the sound disorients them, and you're able to kill them. I don't know. She then says, well, the bear trap didn't reach the bone, but that wrap won't last. I'm going to need to get supplies for him, at least antibiotics. Yeah. And obviously, she also has noticed that he is alone. And she says, I'm sorry about the boys. When did they die? And he says, they died that day. And then Nora died 11 weeks ago. So he was with his wife for, months after this. And she was sick, and we held out as long as we could, but she was in horrible pain, and so she would be screaming all the time. So I thought, I'll bring her down here where the walls are like 3 feet thick, there's a hatch, and then maybe we'd be protected, but then she died anyways. So I appreciate it. It's like, you went to an extreme to try to save your wife, but it wasn't enough. Yeah. And Evelyn says, when you saw the flame, like we saw your flame. So when you saw it, did you know it was Lee? And Emmett says, yeah. And he said, did you ever think to come for us? And Emmett said, no.
I mean, I could see it both ways. You know what I mean? Like, I could see being like, it is already so hard to keep this survival going. Like, let's just do what we're doing and stay put and stay just us. But then it's like, also, it would be better, like, community is helpful.
Right. I feel like for me, I'm really going to do well with a group of people.
More people.
Right.
Me too.
I'm really good at menial tasks, taking care of the kids. You need laundry. That kind of stuff I can really shine at, right?
Yes.
Plotting, coming up with ways to kill the alien. I'm probably not your gal. I would be completely honest.
Yeah, science, not really my thing.
But, you know, just being part of a community, I think that's great.
Yep.
And I think Evelyn does kind of sort of look down. Like, she kind of was like, oh, okay. And Evelyn says,
the people that are left, what they've become. You don't know, do you? They're not the kind of people worth saving.
So I kind of thought, well, we'll just stay here. And the implication is, well, I would just die eventually. You know, like, what's kind of
right,
the point?
Right, like, how long can this really
exactly.
go on?
Exactly. Suddenly, Allison and Marcus sits up in bed, gasping. Reagan's radio is picking up music. And they're like, music? Somebody's playing music. Like, somebody else is alive then. And Emma says, it plays the same song over and over again. It's Frank Sinatra's Beyond the Sea. Someone's been playing it for months. But Reagan's really like, you know how she and her dad were kind of at odds? Apparently, just any kind of male authority figure she needs to be at odds with.
She's like,
there's no way it's been months because my dad would have heard it because he was listening to the radio and out doing his own research. And Emmett's like, it's the valley. Like, you guys were down, and when you came up here, we couldn't hear it back at our house
either.
Different
signal.
When we came to the factory, we were on higher ground so we could be able to hear it. And Reagan says, you're nothing like my father. It's like, okay, girl, I get it. It's very stressful. This is your go-to reaction is to push back his authority. But like this specific thing has nothing to do with your father. And he also wasn't saying that he was better than him. He's like, yeah, I'm not. It's just because of the change in location. And of course, Marcus is like, oh, so that means there's more people. And that sets Emmett off. And he's not saying that there's no people. He's saying there's no point, basically. He's like, there's nothing left of society. I want you all to go. I want you to leave tomorrow.
Like, there's no power grid anymore.
Yes.
Like, what's the plan?
And that, of course, means that his journey will have to be to believe again, to want to see the world again.
To want to survive.
To want to survive again. Yeah. But he says, I want you to leave tomorrow. Then he storms off to some other part of the factory. And we see Marcus, Evelyn, and the baby start snoozing because it's been a long day.
Yeah.
And Marcus wakes up to Reagan putting her hand over his mouth and shushing him. And they go into the vault which is also soundproof, but she puts a little towel in the door. Yeah. And they're playing the song in there. And she's like, it's not a song. I mean, it is a song. It's a signal. She says it's not a song, it's a signal. I'm like, girl, it's both, obviously.
Yes.
And she says, I was able to find the radio station because I looked at, like, what frequency it's at. This is something that her father must have taught her because I would never figure this out.
Looking at a radio, I'm like, okay.
Right, so, like, based on what frequency it was at, she was able to, like, geolocate it. Okay, I guess.
Sure.
And she said, I found the radio station. It's on an island. So I can follow the train tracks. I can get all the way down there. She has a map. And it's only one day. So if I could find a boat, I could get to the island and I could see if there's people there and get help. And Marcus says, you're going to die. What do you mean? You can't do that. You're just going to go? No. He's like, no. She's like, I could use my hearing aid on their broadcast equipment. Like, if they're broadcasting, I could broadcast the feedback. So then that will help people because then when you play it, the aliens become vulnerable to you.
Yeah.
And Marcus is too panicked at the idea that she'll be killed. And he's like, I'll tell mom. You're not allowed to go. I'll tell mom.
Yeah.
Ray says, I'll have to. This.
Yeah, splitting up feels.
Yeah.
Like, not the
And
move.
Also, to be very.
Like, you all should just go.
And he was just in a bear trap, so he's probably very sensitive, you know?
Yes.
And he's freaking out. And he says, you know, tell mom. Ray says, I have to do it. This is what dad would have done, which is fair. But then, and of course, they're signing this whole conversation. And Marcus signs back, and look what happened to dad. Which is also a fair point, where it's like, oh, if you want to be like dad, well, then you're going to be taking risks that
dad's dead.
Yeah, dad's dead. The timer goes off, Allison, and they go back in to the living quarters. And at this point, I would ask, what would you do in this scenario, Allison?
What would you do?
I mean, I would, like, pitch it to mom as, like, let's all go. here's all the information. Like, let's go to that. Like, I guess it is the issue that, what's the son's name?
Marcus.
Marcus can't like travel because of his bear wound.
They don't really even address it. Like, cause it's, they don't bring it up to the mom. To me, if they have to leave, why wouldn't I just all go there?
Right. Yeah. I guess like that would be my pitch. I'd be like, let's just do this. Like, what are the other options? We can't stay here, and we don't know what the other next, like, closest thing is.
Right. Also, I mean, like, yeah, like, Emmett's kind of a pissant, but if you said, hey, there might be other people, will you go with my daughter? He might be open to something like that, but again, yeah. I don't know. He seems pretty, he's in his own world about what's going on. So, but yeah, I'd at least hash it out as a group and let your mom know what you're thinking before you bounce.
Because it does seem like a good direction.
Oh, it's a solid idea. It's a solid idea if I ever heard one.
Is that an island in the ocean or in a lake?
So it's an island in the ocean, but it's like pretty close off the coast.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be like you could row there. It just wouldn't take. It would take a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I would do. I wouldn't sneak off, but that's Reagan for you. Listen, she's got a hard head and she's gonna follow it.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We see Marcus dozes off, and a pipe is dripping from where the alien ran into it upstairs. One of the pipes is displaced and sort of dripping water. And the drips wake up Marcus. They fall on his face, and he turns. And we see Reagan's radio is next to his head and a note that says, keep listening. She's gone.
Yeah.
She's taken her backpack and her amplification kit, and she is on her way to, hopefully, Survivor Island. Evelyn immediately, you know, starts begging Emmett, please go find her and bring her back. Like, we were friends once. My husband is dead. I have all these kids. I am begging you. You don't have to do anything else. Just please go get her and bring her back. And he agrees.
Okay.
To his credit. Walking on the train track, Reagan passes Spring Street train station, which I love this little tableau because there's a ton of women's pumps. And I'm like, why would pumps be all scattered all the platform? Like, oh, everyone ran out of their shoes when this happened.
Yeah.
Like, if you were
everyone was commuting from the city or like from the closest town and took off their shoes to run.
Exactly. And I just love that. It is sort of a ghostly little image. She finds an abandoned train and goes inside to check it out for supplies. We also see that she took one of the guns. So it took the shotgun.
Yeah. Smart.
Which I'm like, damn, I'd also, if I was her, I would be pissed that I didn't know where the guns were. But I guess at least she knows that she has it, you know?
Yeah.
And we see in the train car, there are bodies. They're basically mummified at this point. So they're like desiccated. They're not rotting bodies because it's been over a year.
Yeah.
And they're kind of dried out. So she puts her stuff down and pushes her way into the control booth, trying to look for supplies. And she's able to reach in and get the first aid kit. And when she pulls it back, like, she can't open the door all the way because it's behind it. A like desiccated conductor mummy falls under her hand. And she falls to the ground and drops the first aid. Unfortunately, she now has bigger fish to fry. She looks, there's an alien at the end of the train car. Allison, she grabs her feedback kit, pops that shit open, turns it up, puts her hearing aid to it. The alien, of course, screams and opens its face and shoots it, but it just wings it. So it hits him, but it doesn't kill him. And so now it's enraged. She goes to load the gun again. It jams.
Yeah, and see, this is why a shotgun is just not...
Exactly.
Not it.
All is lost as this alien runs. And I guess it is screaming. It's sort of like... But it is a generic sound. It is sort of like ambient to the movie versus, oh no, we hear the sound and the creature is afoot, if that makes sense. Fortunately, as it runs towards her, it lunges and then its head explodes. And we turn and see Emmett just shot it in the skull. How many aliens do you think are in the world, Allison? Because that's at this point, I'm like, damn, how many of these motherfuckers are there?
I thought like that they thought there were only three in the area.
Right. So,
and now we're up to, you know, five or six that we've seen between the first movie and the second.
And also, right, like, are they territorial? Is that why they don't right. congregate in the same area?
Are they reproducing?
That's a really excellent question. Are they
reproducing?
Motherfucking producing. Damn, they would, those bastards.
They would. They really would.
So they hide in the train station, and he says, we're going to wait here until we're sure the coast is clear, and then we'll go back. Of course, she realizes she can't hear him, and he starts freaking out. He's like, well, how am I supposed to communicate with you? And she says, like, takes his head in her hand and goes, enunciate, because she can read lips.
Yeah.
But, you know, she said, just enunciate. So he's able to communicate with her. He says, they heard the shot. Other aliens are going to be coming over here. I'm taking you back to your mother. I'm not letting you continue on. And, of course, she's showing him the hearing aids and, like, explaining. And he's like, I hear you. Yeah. I'm taking you home. I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah,
and
but Reagan this was my signs, task.
Yeah, Reagan says, what home? Which I think is a fair point. It's like, oh, some yeah. weird guy's basement.
Yeah, that in, you're
like,
kicking us out of.
Yes, anyways. But she says, you said before that, like, you were talking about your wife, and you said it wasn't enough. This can be enough. This is enough for us. Like, you could be provide enough for my mother and Marcus and the baby while I'm gone. Like, that's good. Like, clearly that really rattled you, and now you could do this really kind thing for us. And he kind of thinks about that. He's like, I guess that's fair. You yeah. know, and, so, and again, I think it's like him interacting with the human world again of like, I could be nice again. I could do something yeah. nice. Back then, we see Evelyn cuddling the baby, but she clocks that the oxygen tank is low. So she not only, you know, we need to get antibiotics for Marcus, but we have to get a new oxygen tank if we possibly can. Back at the train, Reagan wakes up in a sunbeam. She rolls over. All of her shit is gone, including her hearing aids. And Emmett is nowhere to be seen. So she is out there, no gun, no nothing.
Just like a kid.
Yeah. So she runs on, of course, collapses to the ground, sobbing. Allison, Emmett returns and says, and has all of her stuff. And he says, I found a boat. So we're near the water.
Okay.
Back at the factory, we see Evelyn has suited up. She's going into town to get medication and hopefully an oxygen tank. Then I'm like, damn, I just gotta imagine it's been over a year. Wouldn't you have taken all, like, that's yeah. the exact kind of thing where you'd be like, oh, I don't know when I'll need an oxygen tank, but I'm going to take it just in case.
Yeah. Right? I guess it's like because you could only bring back what yeah, you can carry.
That's true.
You might not have taken, but like, how much could have been in this like general store in a small town? Like,
exactly. That's
like,
really
I don't
point.
Think it's like, it's not like a Costco with like a ton of right. inventory.
If only. Yeah. If you're going to be an alien apocalypse, make sure there's a Costco
be
nearby.
Near a Costco.
We see Evelyn. So she emerges out of like the actual entrance to the basement, which is like a hatch. It's almost like it's a very dramatic hatch like a submarine would have. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, you dramatically emerge from it. We see water dripping again from that broken pipe. Or loose pipe. It seems like it's working. There's water in it. I guess it's not broken. Just leaky. Marcus tries to follow his mother and signs, please don't go. I don't know how to take care of the baby. And she says, you do, and you have everything you need. I will be back in a few hours. I will not be gone long. You're going to be fine. Mm. And she says, look, soon you're going to be in a lot of pain because I kind of presume this is going to get infected. I cannot risk losing you.
Yeah.
So I have to go find antibiotics. And with that, Marcus reluctantly shuts the hatch and Evelyn goes out into the yonder to get to town. Meanwhile, we see Reagan and Emmett walk over a car-choked bridge. So they are right near the water, and all these cars are just abandoned. It's sort of, we have these parallel shots of, like, Evelyn walking back across the bridge where she sees her son's memorial cross again, and she leaves her wedding ring on it. It's sort of like she doesn't have anything to leave there, but she leaves her wedding ring now that her husband has died.
Yeah.
Yesterday, like, I mean, basically, like, 38
right. oh
hours
my God.
Ago.
Right,
yeah.
It's like a day later.
Yeah, goddamn. You know, they're also exhausted. Back in the factory, we see Marcus is, like, singing to the baby, who's a little fussy. But also, the baby's been taking this like a champ. Like, that yeah. baby was just born.
Rolling with it. Yeah.
Happy, you know, not fussing a little, but not crying. However, he puts the baby in the box and turns on the gas just to make sure the baby's quiet. But he doesn't know or he doesn't notice that the oxygen supply is low in the tank. So he's now put the baby in a box with very little oxygen because he's going to leave and go look at the rest of the factory. So he's going to sort
no.
of do a reconnaissance.
No.
I know.
Sit where you are.
I know. We see him pop out the hatch just as Evelyn gets to the pharmacy, just as Emmett and Reagan make it to the docks. And it's nightfall now. And so Emma goes, great. They're looking around, and they find a boat tied to the dock. So he's like, all right, great. So he starts to untie the boat rope, and a figure darts past them in the dark. And Emma gets out his rifle in a panic. Meanwhile, Evelyn finds more oxygen tanks. Marcus is exploring the factory, and he finds, like, there's another bedroom upstairs, also full of drawings of Emmett's family. Aww. And he sees a sheet hanging from the ceiling. Allison, he pulls aside the sheet, and in the bed is, of course, the mummified body of Emmett's wife.
Yeah. Not yeah. great.
Not great.
But, you know.
Kind of understandable.
Like, what else?
Where are you going to put her?
Yeah, you just close off that bedroom and yeah. and that's what that is.
Exactly, right.
Because, like, also, like, to dig a grave feels noisy.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly. On the dock, Emma and Regan find the figure that darted past them. Allison, it's a filthy little girl. She's crouching on a bunch of terrific. Boat ropes and nets, her head down. And, of course, Emmett, who is now warming to the idea of humanity again, goes to her and is like, it's okay, don't worry, we're not going to hurt you. And when the girl looks up, she takes a piece of boat rope and throws it over his neck like a noose. And we realize it is a noose that is attached to a fishing line also covered in cans and bottles. So she's essentially thrown a cloak of noise over him.
Oh, my God.
As it's a trap, obviously. Yeah. Slowly, a bunch of boat freaks come out. I assume these are just the rich people that had boats, and now they've descended into madness.
Yes,
so, like, just freaks. These boat people. And they sort of come out of all the various boats on the dock to inspect everyone, and they grab Regan, and they put a knife to her face. And also, the main boat guy is Scoot McNeary, which I always just like his name whenever I see
it. Yeah, that's a great name.
We see Marcus, once he sees the... Emmett's wife's corpse, runs back to the hatch, grabs the baby's box. Unfortunately, Allison, not only has an alien gotten into the factory, it has is now trying to follow him down the hatch.
Oh, God.
But the hatch is closed, so it's essentially clawing its way through the floor. And we're
I don't love that they're clawing.
Yes, absolutely. It's a new development. Because then it's like, oh, if it knows we're down here, it's going to keep coming down here. Right. Whereas before, it seemed like, because it's dumb, it loses interest, or it does. Yeah. If it can't hear anything, it kind of wanders
but if,
away.
If it's following me, yeah.
Yes. So the metal hatch sort of physically collapses into the sleeping quarters. So now there's like an open hole where any alien could come down.
Great.
So just to recap, Allison, Marcus and the baby, who he still does not know is about to run out of oxygen in that box, have fled and are now inside the vault, right? Which is now airtight and must be opened on a timer. However, how can they open it at all if the alien's going to be right fucking outside?
Right. Could you just crack the door?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, but I do feel like the aliens, it would depend.
They get their little hands in there.
They got those little hands. Meanwhile, at the dock, Emmett and Regan are in the clutches of the boat people, the most disgusting people there are.
Yes.
And we know they're disgusting because they look bad, whereas, like, Emily Blunt looks incredible. She doesn't even have roots.
Yeah.
And I saw these boat people. I'm like, yeah, that's what I would look like. Just, like, red-eyed, filthy, long hair, a mess. Exactly. Speaking of, Evelyn is about to arrive back at the factory, doesn't know about any of this. Does it because there are no cell phones. And then we see Marcus realize, when he sets the timer, he didn't put a towel in the door.
Yeah.
They are now locked in the airtight vault, and he has sealed them inside.
And no one knows they're in there, and no one's around.
Allison, at this point, I gotta ask, who will survive?
Who will survive?
We gotta lose someone.
Yeah.
I feel like we're gonna lose Emmett. Is that someone? Killian Murphy.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry. The Quiet Place Part 2 started playing on my computer the second you said that, so. But yes, I think naturally he is the natural pick, right?
Yes, he's going to kind of like, he's come around to like, we do have to go find people. We do have to like survive and create community and like, I shouldn't just be alone. And with that realization, he will be dead.
Absolutely. And how do we?
I have a hard time imagining any of the kids will die, unless everyone dies. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And then, what do we feel about Evelyn, knowing that the third movie is essentially a prequel, and I don't believe that Emily Blunt, maybe she's in it in some sort of like flash forward or flashback
or
something.
But like,
but
oh,
she,
right.
her character, it's not about her. It's about Lupita Nyong'o's character, which just makes, it does make, again, I've said it before, but it makes me more excited to see it. Not that I don't like Emily Blunt or like any
but
of these characters.
Like, show us another kind of facet of this. Because like, it's like, you've built a world, so like we could go to other places in it.
Exactly.
So there's a cat in it. I did see a thing that was like a TikTok from a woman who was like, just a heads up for everybody, the cat does live. So you can go in not worried about that. And like, I know that doesn't spoil, but I was just like, oh, that's nice to know.
Yeah, I just, at this stage in humanity, we're not killing an animal on screen.
No,
I
we don't need to. It's so horrific out here.
Yeah,
I think maybe both. Maybe she dies and he lives and he kind of takes over as kind of the adult figure for these children. That's
okay,
that's
love
my guess.
It. Absolutely love it, Allison.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
In the vault, Marcus is having to trade off the oxygen between him and the baby because he's starting to lose oxygen too, which I think makes sense. It's like, what, it's like put your own mask on before anyone else's. Like,
yeah.
That baby's not getting him out of the vault, you know?
Right.
On the docks, the boat people basically grab all of Regan's shit and start hauling her away. So they're just taking Regan, doing God knows what with her, and leaving Emmett in his cloak of sound to die, hopefully, in their mind, you know. Evelyn arrives back at the factory. She's no slouch. So to distract the alien from her children, she does this very ingenious plan. So basically, she takes the oxygen tank she did find. So I'm like, oh, God, you have to waste one of these. She puts it outside of the hole where the hatch was, and then she fires her gun into the air, which draws the alien back up to the first floor. When the alien emerges, she shoots past it. Like, you think she's going to shoot the alien. She shoots the oxygen tank, which explodes, consuming the alien in flames.
Okay.
Allison, I have terrible news. They are seemingly immune to flames.
What?
Because
what are these guys?
It just walks past, like, it walks out of the flame Terminator style. Which I do love and I think is really fun.
Yeah, that's great, but like not for her. That's
exactly.
Not good for her.
However, the one benefit of what happens is it sets off the sprinklers. So the sprinklers are now creating an ambient sound, and we get like a very a beautifully done. I like whenever you see the inside of the alien's ear. Like I like seeing inside its head. And so you see this shot of like, it just hears the rain. It can't sense her anymore.
Yes.
So again,
that's great.
I don't know if she planned the rain part. I don't know exactly, but a genius of the four.
But it worked.
She's been at this, right?
Water, them with water, not like a problem. It's more the sound situation.
Yes. So, okay. but then I think we will have the same problem is when the water starts coming down, it does start filling up the basement. So then we are in a little too much of a similar situation as we were before. Nonetheless, momentary at least got the alien away from the vault, which is all we could ask for. Back at the dock, we see, Regan's being taken away by the boat people, and she turns back to look at Emmett, sort of like, I don't know what the fuck to do. And much as we learned at the baseball game, he does the sign for dive. So the one sign he does know, he does remember.
Okay, great.
And he goes, dive. And she says, okay. And so she just hurls herself like sideways off into the water, and Emmett goes full on, attacks the boat people with clanging and all the cans and bottles ringing, right?
Yes.
So she's in the water. He's attacking them knowing that the sound is going to draw aliens. So then, of course, all of the boat people start freaking out.
Yes.
Scoot McNairy is all over the place. He drops his lantern. It starts burning all the boat rope. And jeez, then the whole goddamn dock goes up, right? The ruckus, of course, draws an alien. And Emmett grabs the boatman and stabs his knife into the man's thigh. Ugh. And the man screams. And he essentially throws the man at the alien.
As like a loud distraction.
Exactly. And then
here,
hurls himself. Emmett hurls himself also into the water. Unfortunately, he's essentially has a net tangled around his throat and is dragging him underwater. It is, of course, he's getting tangled in it. Yeah. This to me was the most upsetting scene because that I could get tangled in a net any day of the week. This
sure. Happen if me. There's one nearby, I'm going to get caught in it.
Absolutely. And we see suddenly the water turns red and he is loosed. He's able to escape, but the boatman's body has hit the water and filling it with blood. Unfortunately, now he surfaces.
Here come the sharks.
And the aliens, I know, the aliens have filled the marina. So there's a bunch of different aliens. They're jumping on all the different boats. They jump on the boat that they undid from the dock, which is now just kind of drifting in the water. And one of the aliens leaps onto it. Then another one leaps on. Allison, it jumps in the water after him. These stupid fucks cannot swim.
Oh, amazing.
Incredible news. Because when I saw it jump in the water, I'm like, well, I'm sorry, Emma. This is, you've come far enough.
Yeah, you are dead.
We leave you here. They can't swim, which to me is hilarious. And it's even more hilarious that they didn't know that. Like, that this guy would just jump in the water. But excellent news for Regan and Emmett, because they're both now in the water. Regan's able to get in a little boat, like a rowboat, and paddle over and pulls Emmett out. And out of his mouth, he pulls her functioning hearing aids. So he was smart enough. He took them and he put them in his mouth to save them.
People's
and they
survival.
Were.
I mean, I know that this is fiction and somebody wrote that, but like somebody thought of it. I wouldn't have thought of it.
Oh, and again,
I would have swallowed them.
We would. I mean, like we could carry luggage. We could plant things. Like we could.
I could
put on a show. You mean like we have a lot of different skills.
Yes. I can storytell. Like you could literally do. We won't be able to watch movies anymore in the quiet place. But you could do this for us.
It's like a 30 Rock where where Jack's like, "What do you think you're gonna do?" Like you know, when society collapses, and she's like, "Traveling bard." we shall be the traveling bards.
Traveling bards.
And we'll just tell the story. I mean, I guess isn't that what we're already doing? Not traveling bards. Fortunately, so they're safe on the boat, at least for now. Back at the factory, Evelyn arrives with enough time to open the vault door. Marcus is passed out, but he and the baby are alive and they're okay. Unfortunately, the alien is still up there. So it drops down into the basement, which now is filling with water. And so they have to shut the door again. But this time they do put the towel in the door. So it's like, thank God.
Thank God.
Because, like, the difference between life and death and the death of your entire family being a towel, again, that feels
too
rad.
Too flimsy.
Yeah. Allison, Emmett, and Regan make it to the island. And Emmett is shocked to find a very summer camp environment. Like, things seem to be going really well there. There's kids. They have a bonfire. They, like, you know, they're taking shifts cooking. They're running. And they have a radio station to try to put out this signal to people. Yeah. And everyone's very chill.
Right, because I guess the aliens, if they can't swim, they can't get out there.
They can't get out there. So you got to imagine, like, okay, so there's probably, unless they landed on, say, Hawaii. If they didn't land on Hawaii, they wouldn't be able to swim there. So like, they would be unlikely to be able to get
there. So places that aren't part of, like, contiguous.
Yes, and we got to hope that those places didn't happen to have one of them land there, I think is sort of the hope. But one of the survivors, Digimon Hansu, comes over and says, "Oh, so did you guys hear the signal?" And they're like, "Yeah." He's like, "Good. We weren't sure if anyone was out there, but we just thought we'll just play it. And if this is helpful at all, you know, then at least we'll have done something." And he said, "Well, Emma, you figured it out, right?" And he says, "No, she did." And my thinking is like, why not make a recording and play a recording of like directions to the island? Is there a reason not to do that?
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't do that. Why, like, it has to be a song that's a reference to where they are, and then you still have to geolocate where it's coming from.
Right, because it'd be different if the aliens were smart and sentient and could, like, figure it out. So you had to use some sort of code they wouldn't understand.
But, like, they don't talk or know English, so.
No. Also, Digimon Hansu's, it doesn't have a character name. On Wikipedia and IMDb, he's credited as the man on the island, which I think is so annoying to me as someone recapping this film. But I'm just going to call him a Digimon.
Just keep calling
then.
Him by his real name.
Right, but, like, give a man a name, but come on.
Yeah, call him Chris and keep it moving.
Yeah. He says, we've been here since day one. Basically, we were in the area, we were near the shore, and, the National Guard is stationed over here, and they realized pretty quickly the aliens couldn't swim. So they were getting boats to take people to the island. They're thinking just temporarily, but they load us all up, and unfortunately, everyone started to push forward to get on the boats. People started screaming and fighting.
They had 12 boats lined up on the dock that day. Only two got out.
Oh.
And so they're talking. He's like, so how long did you travel? And Emmett said, it took us about a little under 2 days to get here. And Digimon says, that's determination. And Emmett replies, it's a necessity. Digimon said, yeah, to survive. And Emmett says, no, to give in. And I guess we're to assume that the giving in means, like, I have to entrust in humanity again. I have to care about this again. I have to give in to the fact that, like, well, I can't just seal myself up in this factory. And also, he definitely can't now. He's going to be really pissed about what has happened to his house. Like, basically, he's gone for 12 hours and the whole thing is filled with water and aliens.
Yeah, it's all, yeah. You live on the island now.
He also then shows Digimon the hearing aids and starts explaining how to use them, like what the plan is.
Yeah.
Emma goes to find Regan. He says, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry about everything. I'm sorry I doubted your plan to come down here. I was wrong. You were right. I'm nothing like your dad. You're like your dad. And of course, that's all Regan wants to hear. And she's like,
I mean, yeah.
My new dad telling me I'm like my old dad, you know? Aww. And we see him, he walks to the water's edge just as, like, the sun starts to rise because they've been out all night. And on the beach, he takes out a drawing of his son all folded up in his pocket. You know, so in case we didn't get it, it's like, okay, I too was folded up in my pocket, but now I will unfold in order to, you know, be a part of humanity again. Unfortunately, all of a sudden he hears, like, thudding against the rocks, and he sort of goes around this corner on the beach, and it's the boat from the marina that they had untied that the last we saw had an alien on it, and it just drifted with the tide.
Oh,
he's like,
God.
Oh, no, there was an alien on that boat. And so, of course, he immediately starts running over, but it takes a minute to get from the beach back to the, like, cabins, essentially.
Yeah, area.
Regan's inside one of the cabins explaining the hearing aid thing to a little boy who's Digimon's son and, of course, like, loving getting to talk to someone who isn't her immediate family. Unfortunately.
Yes. Oh, my God. That must be so nice.
Emmett runs back to camp and starts screaming, get inside. Allison, it's too late. The alien is on them. It is killing people. People are running, screaming. He grabs, like, some random kid and runs inside the cabin. He and Digimon take whoever's little boy this is and put the little boy and Digimon's son in a closet and say, we're leaving you here. Do not make a sound. And sort of, like, locks them in. The idea is, like, that they'll be safe in there. But they are going to go to the radio station. I'm like, why not just do it there and kill that alien?
Yeah.
But I think we're too deep in it. I think we just got to – we need to have our climactic set piece, right? So the men run to a car. They throw Regan in it, and they start speeding towards the radio station. And Digimon starts honking the horn to draw the alien towards them. So, like, the alien's following them, which is very smart, like, keeping away from rest of the community.
The main,
The alien lands on top of the car, and unfortunately it's one of those, like, fabric-topped convertibles. Yeah. So it's clawing through the roof. God.
So it just rips right through it.
Yeah, at one point it disappears. And, the real scare this had for me is Regan's in the back, and the alien disappears, and she kind of peers under the flap as it moves, and the alien just... rears back and snaps at her hand. Yeah. Jumped in my seat. Finally, the alien does fall off, and they make it to the radio station, and they're able to slide under this, like, a half-open garage door, and they slide underneath, but then Digimon doesn't hear the alien. He's like, what if we let it go? What if it went back? My family's back there. And he takes a step back, like, I'm going to go look, or I'm going to go drive back. He doesn't even have time. He takes a step back, and underneath the garage door, the alien's big old spindly arms come and drag him to his doom. And we hear him as he screams. Unfortunately, because of the garage door situation, the alien then immediately gets into the radio station. So Emmett and Regan are running through the radio station trying to figure out where the setup is, which is not inherently intuitive, like if you're not in a radio station. And the alien is in the radio station essentially stalking them, so they have to be dead silent. Meanwhile, back at the factory, Evelyn opens the vault door for air, sees the basement really filling up with water now, and seemingly no sign of the alien. So she's like, okay, if the alien left, then we need to get the fuck out of here before we drown. And we see her start to collect supplies for them to go. Meanwhile, back at the radio station, we see Emmett help Regan. So she has to, like, climb into, like, one of those booths. Like, she's essentially, like, they're in the recording studio, and she's climbing through a window onto the, like, control panel. And they have to do everything silently because of the alien. Needless to say, the alien is, of course, immediately, like, it's a close space. You know what I mean? She inadvertently makes a sound. Back at the factory, Evelyn, outside of the vault, turns to see the alien appear behind her. She runs and tries to close the vault door, but it rips it back open. It's too late. It is reaching inside and slashing at them. But because it is stupid, it is, like, not realizing that, like, it's basically pressing its full shoulders against the opening. If it just turned to the side and reached with one of its arms, it could probably get them.
Yes.
Like, it'd be like if you reach into a pickle jar to grab a pickle, but then you can't get your hand out because you're holding the pickle. Where it's like, if you just were able to think about this slightly, like, just think about this in a slightly different way, but luckily it can because it's not sentient. So it's, but they are, like, at the end of this little tiny vault screaming, terrified, while this is happening. Back in the radio station, Regan is able to get to the radio equipment. And I thought for sure, that Emmett was going to die because he is injured. Yeah. He is sealed off in a different room and the alien is advancing on him. He sees her. He says, go ahead. Like he knows, he presumes, but she refuses. Instead, she opens the door and she turns the on-air sign on. And then she's able to turn on the radio equipment. And in it puts the feedback on. And in that moment of weakness where its head is unfurled, she picks up a pole, which I'm like, I don't know what kind of pole you have at a radio station, but it doesn't matter at this point. Picks up a pole and just rams it through its juicy, squishy ear brain.
Yucky.
And in the vault, the radio starts playing feedback because the radio is tuned to the radio station. Right. And Marcus grabs his mother's gun and advances on the alien with the screeching feedback radio and shoots it dead. And we are left with a single image, which is Regan's hearing aids dangling from the radio mic. So she is now broadcasting the feedback to whoever hears it.
Whoever's on that frequency.
Provided they are on the proper side of the Appalachian Ridge on the other side of the valley. They will be able to use this to destroy their very own aliens and then hopefully deduce from it, oh, if we do this kind of thing, we'll be able to survive. The Quiet Place Part 2.
Wait. Who was alive at the end?
All of them.
Okay, okay.
Except for Digimon Hansu.
Right, okay.
Because I thought for sure Emmett was going to die.
Yeah.
She saves him just in time.
Okay.
And I think, I'm assuming it's like, well, we can't have the dad die again. So we have to
I guess that's true.
Yeah, so he is injured. And he also, like, there's a moment where they lock eyes and he's like, I'm going to die. Like, just do
this
it.
This is it.
Like, I know. But because I double checked because I was like, wait a minute. Did he die? But he lives. And she gets her moment of victory. In this retelling, she saves her father, the father, and she saves America. And that's why I like that the third one goes back to that first day where it's like, okay.
Yeah, because I don't need this, the next chapter of this. I need to see some other people navigating, like, show me what's happening in a city.
And again, you can't trust reviews, especially not of horror movies anymore, if you ever could. But the reviews have been good. People, I mean, she's a great actress. So I think,
Lupita.
Like that just does, I mean, it does everything in terms of, it doesn't have to be the Oscar winning movie when you have the Oscar winning actress.
No, just want it to be good.
So I'm excited. But yeah, what are some fatal mistakes you think they may have made in A Quiet Place Part 2?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, it's tough because, like, everyone did live.
They crushed it. They did an absolutely incredible job.
They did a great job. Like, everybody was, like, you know, functioning. I guess, like, Marcus going, like, fucking around in the factory alone. Like that, we could have avoided some crises there if he had just kind of stayed put. But that didn't even end in anyone dying. So, you know, I just wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I feel like they did the best they possibly could. Emmett came around. I thought from the trailer that he was going to be evil. I was thinking that it was going to be like, you know, sort of a Night of the Living Dead, like, oh, there's something outside, but the evil is within. It is within man.
And I would have liked
that, but I also get, like, that this is, one, it's for kids, and they don't want it to be an R.
Yeah, this is a family movie. Yeah.
So I understand that, though I would have enjoyed an evil person in this environment just because everyone is so good. In the first movie, everyone was so good. Yeah. And this, I want more of, it's sort of the mist, you know? I think that...
Yeah, you want, like, some other element to kind of be up
And then
against.
When we saw the boat people, I'm like, okay, so the third act's going to be with these evil people. No, we ended the third act with a bunch of sweetie pies who also did their absolute darndest.
In a camp.
And, which, again, is fine. But, yeah, it would have been nice to mix it up. And so maybe it'll be someone evil in the third third movie or not. That's fine, too. We'll see it regardless. And we will do it for our live show.
Live show.
So we hope you enjoyed this. And if not, go fuck yourself. No, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
No, thank you for listening.
If you made it to the end and didn't like this, I'm sorry. That's on you.
Allison, where would you place A Quiet Place Part 2 on the spooky scale?
Spooky scale.
I think this is a 3.
A 3. Okay.
Like, because the aliens are scary. I just don't like them, you know? And I think that, like, the general horror of, like, any sound will draw them out of wherever they are is just, like, that vibe is just tense. Yeah. So I think a 3.
I would say a 1 because I did like this movie. I think even more so than I thought. But it's not scary, and it really was just that one moment with the alien that I found scary. The rest is it's an alien. It's a sci-fi thriller.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed it, but it did not scare me. Well, with that in mind, we will catch you next week. And until then, please keep it spooky. And even though this is not
a bog movie, but
please.
Go with Bog. Don't forget to follow us at Ruin Podcast and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for show updates. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okolati.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.